At the moment, we're joined by Professor Atif Kubursi, Professor Emeritus at McMaster University in Economics. Professor, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Phil. Anytime.
We are very glad to talk to you because, as usual, there is a new crisis unfolding around this matter, the Golan. Maybe I should just ask you quickly, if you could. I want to ask you, of course, about the Beijing meeting and others, but Benjamin Netanyahu visited the Golan Heights, and they made statements recently about, oh, this is a very shocking development, this whatever this incident was involving the deaths of children. And they said these are Israeli citizens in the Golan. That sounds to me kind of wide of the mark. What is the Golan Heights and what is the issue there?
Yeah, the Golan Heights is a Syrian territory that Israel has occupied illegally in 1967 and continues to occupy it. Under President Trump, he unilaterally, unjustifiably, and illegally claimed that declared that Israel has the right to be there. It's not. These are not Israeli citizens. These are occupied territory, and the people consider themselves. Yesterday, in the funeral, the head of the community declared that we are Syrian citizens and remain Syrian citizens, and we're under occupation, and we're not going to buy the story from the Israeli side. There is everything that looks appears to be a false flag type operation, one that's typically known that Americans and their allies have done, whether it's the Gulf of Tonkin, whether it is the Cuban crisis, the plane that was shot out, American plane, where we knew at the end that these were basically perpetrated by the Americans and were basically intended to create a pretext for an assault, an aggression on Cuba or aggression on Vietnam. And there is now a very serious concern here that this unfortunate death of all these young kids, and the last people who could claim to be concerned about it are the Israelis. They've already massacred more than 27,000 women and children, innocent civilians, and they're the last people who to claim that they are so much concerned. There is every concern here that Israel is intended, Netanyahu particularly, in expanding, prolonging this war to preserve and prolong his hold on the government. There are serious concerns among the Israelis that Netanyahu is not doing what's supposed to be done to release all the hostages and to bring to a ceasefire. And what they see in this is an attempt by the Israelis to prolong the war by opening another more serious
a second front. Yeah,
exactly. And the issue here is that, you know, the Hezbollah was attacking Israel and said that we'll continue to do so, but has targeted so far and with lots of precision and lots of declarations that nobody had contested of what they intend to do. They've been hitting barracks, they were hitting buildings housing soldiers. They never targeted or intended to hurt civilians, and let alone brothers and sisters of the people. These are a Druze community, a Syrian community that is part of the region.
It's, you know, it's regrettable that already our foreign minister Jolie has expressed horror and pointed at Hezbollah. It shows how the West has a kind of choreographed response to all these atrocities, where they form a consensus here and then make it a headline. I want to ask you about this very important meeting, which I think shocked everyone, and they're trying to keep it in the back pages. It should be on the front pages, that the Palestinian political leadership across the board, 14 organizations, went to Beijing in their names and met with the leadership and actually agreed on an approach to Gaza, West Bank, and a Palestinian state. Seems to me quite remarkable. Could you talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not the first time, as you know. The Chinese have brought two interlocutors in the region, the Saudis and the Iranians, and tried to establish and organize an understanding that would reduce the tension between the two. And this is another one, a precedent and an important one, bringing the different factions of the PLO, Palestinian organizations, to come together and to exchange understandings and agreements on how to resolve all the differences, particularly as they face a genocidal war that's trying to eliminate them from the region. And it's not restricted to Gaza. Much less has been covered about the settlers going on a rampage and the number of people that have already been assassinated and killed by the Israelis in the West Bank, and the continued increase in settlements, in legal settlements. And there is, even in Haaretz, there are reports that Israel is intending to literally annex the West Bank and to dismantle the Palestinian PNA, National Authority, there. So to a great extent, one would have really liked to see a little bit more coverage and more content about this unprecedented and extremely important event that the Chinese have been able to bring about.
I found it remarkable. And by the way, I noticed how the media here, really, they don't help, of course, because they make it Hamas Fatah, they say. Well, actually, there were 14 groups. They're not insignificant. These are movements that have their own point of view. The PFLP was there, I noticed, and the fact that they could get them to agree on how they would proceed and strikes me also as very important, because the U.S. approach has been to dictate who comes to meetings, who is left out, and also dictating what solutions are. And the fact is, they actually agreed, and it involves China, in that China says, look, we, as a signatory, UN Security Council, we said two states. And so we would like to see that happen. And these parties were accepted to meet under those conditions, right?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And what's really interesting, and you mentioned it, Phil, is that the Americans have always decided who among the Palestinians should speak about the Palestinians. One fundamental mistake, fundamental issue, is the lack of any recognition of agency among the Palestinians. They only see them as factions. They only see them as organizations. They only see them as lackeys or our supporters. They never looked at the Palestinian people as Palestinian people with agency, with the right and obligation to listen to them and have voice for their life and destiny. They literally decide who speaks for the Palestinians, what they speak for the Palestinians, and never to speak for Palestine. That's alone, the fact that they never mentioned the word Palestine. I mean, they say we want two-state solutions, but never mentioned Palestine. Well, who is the second state that has to come to terms with the Israelis? It's not Palestinian, and it's not really Fatah, and it's not really PNA. The Palestinians is a very rich society with diversity and with lots of groups and have spoken for themselves and would like to speak for themselves, and we have not given them, and especially the United States and Canada seems to be towing in line, the agency that the Palestinian, the ability to speak on their own behalf and to listen to the various groups that are part of the political family of the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. It strikes me that I was saying off the top that the U.S. Pretends to be the referee when actually they're part of the fight, and they think they own the situation. The Chinese challenge is actually an international United Nations Charter challenge, which is it doesn't belong in Washington. It belongs at the United Nations Security Council. And if this could work, could it not, if the UN Security Council would seize on this and say, yes, this is how it's going to be resolved?
Look, absolutely. I mean, the issue here, and rightly so, is who is the and what forum and what area and what organization is and should be entrusted with resolving this. The Americans call themselves honest brokers. They're neither honest nor brokers. They are part of the problem. And they have completely and totally wedded their interest with the Israelis and have never given the Palestinians any chance to represent themselves or to speak on their own behalf and to take into account their grievances and the incredible infractions of international law, international humanitarian law that is exercised on the Palestinians on a daily basis. And what we see in Gaza is a flagrant disregard of international law, and we know that there is the ICC that has come up, the International Criminal Court, with a arrest warrant for the Israeli leaders, and the ICJ that has come to almost a condemnation and a charge against the Israelis of committing a genocidal war. They're still debating and considering, but the last agreement And the last ruling is that the Israeli presence in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza, or around Gaza, is illegal, and it's not consistent with international law. If anything, it is basically against international law, infraction of international law, infractions of international humanitarian rights, and ask for Israel to cease and desist and withdraw its occupation and pay reparations, restitutions to the Palestinians of all the damages that they have inflicted on them.
Yeah, and there has to be, you're aware, of course, of this. They've been trying to erase UNRWA, and Canada went a little bit down that road, tried to take money away from UNRWA, but it's clear that the U.S. plan and Israeli plan is to rob the Palestinians of the UNRWA commitment from UN.
Absolutely. I mean, UNRWA is the UN organization that has been from day one after the Israeli crime of occupying Palestine and driving the Palestinians away from their homes, and has kept its help and hand in dealing with their health and education. I mean, this is basically and fundamentally one of the most enormously important activities of the UN and a very cherished organization of the UN that is dealing with the crisis and taking care not only of the Palestinians under occupation, but Palestinians in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Syria, and everywhere they are still dealing with the Israeli crime against these people and trying to tend to their wounds and to serve their interests and providing whatever help the international community. It has been a very effective and to a great extent necessary. I mean, yeah. If you rob them of this, uh, this is uh, it would would be a major travesty because the Palestinians still in refugee camps and tents and other places dealing with the enormous difficulties and challenges of eking a living in the area without any resolution of their inalienable right to self-determination and to the right of return to the areas from which they were evicted.
I'm really glad you underlined that. This is Professor Atif Kubursi, Professor Emeritus Economics, McMaster University. And to me, there's been another big development that, again, the Western media doesn't seem to be anxious to report, and that is that the government of Italy has reopened their embassy and resumed normal diplomatic relations with Syria. And not only that, they have led, and in the EU, they've put together a common letter with Austria, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Greece, Croatia, and Slovenia, saying the EU should recognize and normalize relations with Syria. That seems to me quite a development in Europe where everybody takes their orders from Washington.
Well, absolutely. And there is now more reason to believe that the Europeans are trying to chart an independent and neutral course. Look, I mean, a few years back, right from 2011 to today, 77 countries have sent some of their citizens to fight against the Syrian government and the Syrian people, and have wreaked havoc and destruction and emptied the country. There are about now maybe more than 10, 11 million people who are either internally displaced or around the world. And this war was nothing but an attempt on the part of the Americans. I mean, the Israeli, Ehud Barak, the other day, and Olmert were very flagrant and very honest, saying, look, if the Syrian government went with us and accepted peace with us on our terms, they would have never, you know, faced or experienced this revolution that came out, taking responsibility for being part of the organization and the orchestration and the planning of all the destruction and violence and displacement that took place in Syria. The Italians have woken up and say, enough of this, not in our name. We would like to really come to term and give chance to the Syrian people to live in peace and to reorganize their economy. Today, the Americans are occupying the oil fields in Syria and denying Syria to use their gas and oil. The Turks have really literally occupied and dismantled many of the industries that were thriving in Syria and providing incredible economic benefits to its people and took them to Turkey. Today, the Europeans are waking up and owning up to their responsibility and their role in dismantling, destroying Syria and making the Syrians, running all around the world trying to fetch a secure and safe place for themselves.
Yeah. In many ways, isn't it true that Syria has been the sort of silent target or the unmentioned target of U.S. and Israeli policy? Israelis have to be really bothered to hear about this development with Italy. And I was unaware of the fact that Romania, Bulgaria, Greece, Cyprus, Czech Republic, and Hungary have embassies already there, and they didn't close them.
Well, they know. I mean, they have had the historic relationship with Syria. Remember, Syria is the birthplace of Christianity, Orthodox Christianity, and many people really feel totally disturbed and unhappy to continue to dismantle, destroy Syria and deny this oldest country in the world, the cradle of all the civilization, cradle of Christendom, to be completely wiped out.
Yeah. Trying to just block the sun, as it were. I think you mentioned to me sometime that that Italy is now going to be flying. There are going to be direct flights. Is that true?
Yes, it is. I heard it from the Syrians that there will be flights coming from Greece, flights coming from Italy. You know, there was no airports were continuously bombarded by the Israelis, whether in Damascus or Aleppo or Homs. And now there is a recognition and a concern that the poor Syrians have no access to their homes, to their families, to their birthplace. And many countries are either have already re-established direct flights between their capitals and Damascus or Aleppo, and many others are doing so. And we will, I would not be surprised that it won't take long before most of the countries will re-establish normal relations with Syria.
I really like that picture. And Professor Kubursi, we're so grateful to talk to you. We really want to come back in the future. I think we should focus on Syria and all the problems and the fact that they survived the onslaught that they did. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. And one thing maybe, you know, I would like to mention, I was the acting executive secretary of the United Nations Regional Commission, which is called ESQA, Economic Social Commission of Western Asia, and have dealt extensively with all these countries. Syria at one time, there were 66% of the people, and some people even say even larger, to about 80% on their homes. Syria was totally self-sufficient in food, in all aspects. Syria had a very thriving industry in textile and pharmaceuticals. The trouble now is that Syria is unable to feed itself. Syria is basically and fundamentally, literally, one is not going to be establishing the right numbers as things are not at this moment available. But Syria, that was the breadbasket of the region, is now facing hunger. And there is one thing really we don't talk about, and this is really absolutely a very sensitive area, and one should really focus on it. The Americans and Russians are face-to-face in Syria. They're not face-to-face in Ukraine. They're not face-to-face every place. American troops, planes, and tanks are continuously face-to-face with Syrian, with Russian planes, with Russian tanks. I mean, this is a hot spot and a flashpoint that could literally bring disaster to everybody.
Yes, I think. Oh, I'm really glad you underline that, because Russia has also recently changed its vocabulary a bit and said, if you do these things to us, we will do them to you. So, you know, if and they've indicated that their posture is not to tolerate any further games from the U.S. in any part of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Professor Kubursi, it's very enlightening. Thank you very, very much. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Phil, for bringing me. I'm happy to come anytime. I love to listen to your program, and I think it's one of the very few that gives a balance and a discussion of all the aspects and not typically the propaganda of one group.
Well, thank you very, very much. We do appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Right.
Bye-bye. Bye. That is Professor Atif Kubursi, Professor Emeritus Economics, McMaster University. He, of course, has also, as he pointed out, has worked in the United Nations in various roles. And it is a I believe a suppressed or hidden story, that you might say that Damascus has been perhaps the target of Western imperial interest. And this is like in military matters, they will often make you think the front is here, when actually they're planning a second one, or they have a real target. And they tried to beat Syria into obedience, and it didn't work.